I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello again and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from the news team. Lots in this week's podcast, folks, with controversial new fines for missing cattle tags, proposals to change how farmers are taxed, issues with acres, and updates from this week's Agricultural Science Association conference, all to cover. We've Declan O'Brien, Pat O'Toole, Rachel Donovan and Noel Barden all on the line here raring to go. First up, we'll head to our news correspondent Declan O'Brien. Dec, you report in our page one story this week that the department is considering bringing in fines for missing cattle tags up to €250 a pop. Farmers won't be too pleased to see this coming, Dec. Where has it come from at all and how's it going to work?
It's just a natural progression, really, because the cattle inspections and tagging regime has been taken out of the cross-compliance coverage and method of delivering the penalties. It had been flagged earlier that they were looking at a new regime or a new method in which to penalise farmers, I suppose, an enforcement mechanism. So they've opted for the fixed penalty notices, which are akin to what we get for speeding fines. So what the department are saying is that it'll be a €250 fine for what they deem to be serious breaches of the regulations, that farmers that don't comply with these or don't pay the fines face possible court action and the threat of more inspections. So it's kind of the big stick to keep things in line, you know. Now, the old system under cross compliance, it was generally a 3% penalty on your basic payment, which, given that the average basic payment is €9,000, that was about €270 of a fine. So if you are on the average basic payment or have a larger basic payment, this new system actually will be better than the old.
Well, it's a very interesting one, Dec. And look, as you said there, you know, the department using it as a big stick. I was talking to the Owl Lad about it there last night about these €250 fines. And like many farmers, I suppose he was getting straight to the point. Is it per tag or per animal or that fine? You know, is it $500 all in if a cow is missing two tags or is it yet to be worked out?
No, it's going to be a €250 fine for the offence at farm level. So it's not going to be per tag. This is going to be a one-off fine per farm, really, for the tagging offence.
Okay, well, look, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And, Dec, look, you were also reporting there on page 4 on the ICMSA's statement to the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee yesterday evening. They're claiming that nitrates are being used to secure agriculture's climate change reductions. What did they have to tell you?
Well, they are saying, really, that the banding and the threat form of a reduction in cow nitrates level from 250 to 220 kilos per cow has the potential to reduce cow numbers by up to 25% on some holdings. They're saying the new nitrates derogation is going to be the method to achieve a reduction in cow numbers for the department and for to achieve their climate change targets. They're saying that it's unfair. They say there is no clarity to this move, and that in effect, really, that it's an underhand method of achieving what they're looking to achieve in the climate change goals.
Thanks, Declan. Look, we'll have more on that Agriculture Committee meeting in the Oireachtas there yesterday evening and what they discussed on Nitrates Online and the Irish Farmers Journal. Thanks for joining the podcast, Dec. Pat, look, we'll head to you next. You were looking at proposals to change tax measures from the Commission on Taxation. We heard a lot about this one this week. It was discussed in national media. And look, it has somewhat been quashed by some members of government or in cabinet. But how's it looking for farmers? I suppose, what are they looking to propose in terms of how farmers are taxed?
Quite a few proposals that would affect farmers, but by far the most significant is in relation to farm transfers. At the moment, there are significant exemptions, if you like, for farm families transferring land, and there's a good reason for that, because the asset value of the land, it's disproportionate to the earning power of the land from most farming activity. So a family farm is built up over multiple generations. Land is bought with money which is tax paid on it, because it's not tax deductible land purchase. So when you put all those things together, you have a strong case to justify the supports that are there. And there's two, really. Lifetime transfer capital acquisitions tax. If it's after death, it's the capital gains tax. But the big one really is agricultural relief. And that allows farmers to shrink the asset value, or if you like, you can put it the other way, to multiply out the threshold at which you start to pay tax. So the threshold for parent to child transfers is 355,000 as things stand, which is not a lot of money in terms of land value. A 20 acre field in most parts of the country would struggle to get under that threshold. So the average family farm, as we know, is 35 hectares. So that, you know, that would incur a very significant burden. So what agricultural relief does is it transforms that 355,000 effectively into 3.5 million, because there's 90% agricultural relief, which reduces the asset value. If it's anything under 3.5 million, will come down to under that 355,000. You basically take a naught off the figure, and that's the taxable asset. Or that's the asset that is tax is not levied on. So farm planning, farm succession planning, very important, huge encouragement from government. And the Commission for Taxation are proposing that the level of support should be reduced, so that 90% agricultural relief should be reduced. They don't say how far, although I have heard a figure 80% being mentioned. They're also talking about simultaneously reducing the capital acquisitions tax itself, so that the threshold, so that 355,000 would come down. And it has come down in recent years. It was standing around 500,000, and the tax paid on the balance, anything over that 500,000, was 22%. It's now 33%. So we have seen increases in capital taxes in recent years, but for farm families, asset value, like I say, around the 3.5 million, where the farmer qualifies. And there are some stringent criteria around that. 80% of the assets that the person is inheriting, 80% of their assets must be agricultural assets. So that's quite a high mark for people to attain. And again, there's good reasons for that, because they don't want to attract wealth into farming, where wealthy people see land as a safe asset to purchase, especially in volatile times. Land holds its value over time, and they don't want to encourage where people would see that they buy this asset, which is relatively safe investment, and use it to transfer wealth from one generation to the other, where no farming is really involved, where non-farmers are attracted in. So there's a lot to consider in this, and the council, or the Commission on Taxation, is this 13 strong body drawn from across Irish life, I suppose, Irish business, and they They advise the government on taxation issues and on welfare issues, but the government doesn't have to take that advice. And like you say, the government has come out quite strongly and said that they are not in favour of this. It will be interesting in the coming weeks to see were the government to fall, and the numbers aren't grating for government at the moment. They're effectively a minority government. Were this government to fall, or were we to have a general election, it seems like we would have a very different government the next time. And are the other parties in the Dáil of the same mind as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who have spoken out on this, where they say that they don't want to change capital taxes, not only on capital tax thresholds and exemptions, not only for farmland, but also for family house homes, which come into a similar category. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next on that. But this is not over by any means, because the Commission on Taxation are a significant player, and their opinions will be taken on board, not just by the government parties, but by all the political parties.
Life's full of things we can't depend on, like the Irish weather, predictably unpredictable. When you're cutting it fine, but the tractor in front is out for the day. No winner of this week's you-know-what. So much for Lucky 7. But some things you can depend on. Like in home heating. Emo, Jones Oil and Campus Oil are now Serta, delivering the same warmth to your home, now and into the future. For home heating you can depend on, see SertaIreland.ie.
Head over to yourself now, Rachel. You've been talking to farm advisors on the new acre scheme. You report on page 7 that the planning is one big mess. Look, first of all, could you explain to listeners when acres opens and how they can apply? And then maybe on these issues advisors seeing with it, could you just go through them first and then maybe how they could be addressed?
Yeah, so I suppose, first of all, Barry, farmers have to express their interest to an advisor, whether they be private advisors or Teagasc advisors. So that an advisor has to construct a plan and submit the plan on the farmer's behalf. So these plans are to be submitted. It's set to open. The option to submit a plan is set to open in mid to late October, we're told, and they all have to be gone in by the 15th of November. So I suppose the issue that advisors are finding at the moment is primarily with the GLOM system, which was supposed to be up and running from early August, so that advisors could construct plans ahead of the October opening of for submissions. So I suppose time is of the essence at the moment. Time is running out. They're saying, as you said, it's a complete mess, and rather find it hard to make head nor tail of this GLOM system for making plans. And I suppose ultimately at the moment they can't tell farmers exactly what they're going to be able to earn, and ultimately if it'd be worth their while entering the scheme. You know, there's lots of reports there that it's not going to be as, the payments aren't going to be as high as they were in GLOS, and there's a lot more work has to be done. So that's definitely a big issue. One advisor in Mayo told me that the GLAM system is saying that one of her clients is in a designated area for geese and swans, and a Cork-based advisor saying the same is happening for her, but it's coming up as hen harrier. So they're not sure why it's saying that, because they both know that that's not the case for either farmer. So there definitely is some glitches with the system. And another advisor said that the scheme was really only half launched. So as well as that, Barry, the final specifications for the scheme haven't been circulated yet. So advisors really are only finding out information about acres in dribs and drabs, and kind of through WhatsApp group chats. You know, they're advising a farmer, what they advised the farmer last week, what they could do with regards to measures and actions they could take is a different story this week. So definitely a lot of things up in the air with acres at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, Rachel. As you said, there's sort of dribs and drabs in terms of information getting to those advisors. Look, you were also looking at the demand for generators over recent weeks. And on page 20, you describe how dairy farmers are looking for them big time. Are they getting themselves set for power cuts over the winter, or why is that demand growing?
Yeah, so I suppose talks of energy shortages, Barry, seems to have led to a spike in this demand. I spoke to a Dublin-based generator company called generators.ie, and their sales rep Gary O'Shaughnessy told me that they can't keep the phone answered to people from rural Ireland in general, but especially farmers, and of these farmers it seems to be dairy farmers who are looking to inquire about generators and buy generators. And I suppose at the moment stocks are low and they're kind of waiting for deliveries, but they're constantly being depleted because of, I suppose, the demand there. And these generators that farmers are looking into are costing anywhere from €10,000 to €15,000. And I suppose they're obviously going to be able to run a milk and parlour. So he said there's also quite the demand there on, I suppose, domestic generators that could run fridges, you know, keep your television going, domestic household generators. And they're costing around €1,500. So yeah, and I spoke to a couple of merchants around the country as well, and they're definitely seeing increased inquiries for generators. And I spoke to Dairy Gold and Glanbia there, so they're definitely seeing more inquiries. But one merchant told me that coal is still very much so on people's minds, and orders for coals for coal is coming in thick and strong there in the last week or 10 days, he said.
Very interesting, Rachel. I think coal prices are going through the roof there as well. So all becoming more expensive for farmers.
A euro a kilo there at the minute. So we're talking €40 for a 40 kg bag of coal in some places, as well as briquettes have gone up as well. So
mad money, so it is. Yeah. No, look, that's interesting to see that the demand is growing for those generators. And as you said, just based off talk of energy shortages, and there's a lot of that at the moment. Thanks, Rachel. Look, we'll head over to yourself and all next. You were down at the Agricultural Science Association conference in Kilkenny on Friday. I think it was their first time having an in-person conference since 2019 with all of the COVID. In the meantime, there was a few interesting points from it, and you've made a good spread of it there on 16 and 17, or pages 16 and 17 in this week's paper. What are the main ones you can tell us anyway?
Yeah, so we have a nice big mix of news there from the ASA conference. There was quite a variety in the different talks. They all kind of centered around sustainability, but they all touched off different aspects of it. And the speakers were very different as well. So I suppose one of the bigger stories that would have came out of the conference is Professor Frank O'Mara, director of Chagas's announcement that there's going to be a farm-specific carbon counting tool on the way, that Chagas is developing this calculator, this online tool, which will allow farmers to know kind of where the balance lies between their farm emissions and then whatever's sequestered. And this essentially is laying the groundwork for farmers to enter into carbon farming programs, and it could help farmers realize the opportunities that are there in terms of being paid for carbon. More news then from Chagas could be that there's going to be free sustainability advice rolled out to farmers, possibly next year or over the next couple of years. So it's under the umbrella of this signpost program, and essentially it'll be free one-to-one advice where farmers will be told maybe the four or five most important things that they could do to reduce their farm's emissions. And I suppose Frank O'Mara would have said that it will individualize the advice, and it will really kind of lay the foundation for the farming sector to move towards its 25% emissions reduction target. We have another couple of stories then. We have some bits that, despite the sustainability credentials there with young bull beef, that it's still not a real option for Ireland, because selling on to the continent, the European buyers are hungry for steer and heifer beef. And we have a bit as well about Chirlon, formerly Glanbia Co-op, of course. And we've a bit there from their sustainability manager talking about the door still being opened to new entrants to dairy, but they don't see that there will be a huge increase in output over the next couple of years, like there would have been over the past maybe 6 years or so. They really see any future growth that might be there in the dairy sector coming from efficiency rather than just numbers. So a nice mix of stories there, Barry.
Thanks, Noel. Look, as you said, yeah, nice mix across page 16 and 17 of this week's paper. And our last piece for today, folks, our sheep editor, Darren Carty, was speaking to Galway sheep breeders Tom Murphy and Gerry Daly this week on 100 years of the Breed Society. We hear from all of them now.
So I'm joined here by Tom Murphy and Gerry Daly. two proud members of the Galway Sheep Breeders Association. Lads, you have a very big day coming up ahead. 100 years is a significant milestone for the Galway breed.
Certainly, the Galway Sheep Breeders Association was founded during the Civil War in 1922, held their first sale in 1923. And we've been going ever since, so we've survived during the famous economic war, during the Second World War, during the Hungry 50s. We had a decline in sheep numbers maybe during the 1970s or so on. We've survived a number of recessions, and we've survived COVID, and thankfully we're here to mark the 100th.
Tom, if I'm maybe to come to you for a minute, maybe just a quick word on how many breeders are, or maybe to put into context for listeners, because we're talking about a sheep breed that isn't in its thousands, it's in its hundreds rather of yours.
Yes, Darren, we have 65 members now at the moment, and in this present year we lambed about 750 pedigree Galway yos to a pedigree Galway ram. So we have a nice flock of Galways at the moment. And we're really looking forward to the sale now coming up on the 19th of September in Athenry.
Gerry, it's often people have a picture of a sheep in their head, but a lot of people have a picture of Dolly the sheep. And probably the Galway sheep isn't probably too dissimilar from Dolly the sheep.
Absolutely not. And what I find one of the great traits of the Galway sheep is they're very docile. And quite a number of people are inquiring about setting up a small flock of Galway sheep just so that their kids would be safe going out into the field and interacting with them. And I think people have kind of gone back to first principles, maybe back to nature during COVID, and maybe that's one of the benefits of the COVID time. I've got a lot of phone calls now of people who are interested in establishing just a small flock on a small piece of land that they may have at the back of their house, maybe 2 acres or whatever, you know.
Probably a bit of nostalgia as well, because like for a lot of people, they grew up with Galway sheep. It's a bigger type of sheep, but it was the mainstay of say, sheep meat production in Ireland for generations.
Well, absolutely. And it was the mainstay of the family income. And many people, their education was paid for often by the wool. And something that's overlooked is the great value of the wool way back in the earlier years. It peaked, I suppose, during the Korean War when 200 fleeces of Galway wool would buy the car of the day or the tractor of the day.
That's a phenomenal stat when you think of that. Wool now, and I won't talk about the Galway breed, but wool is nearly, you could say, a worthless, say, product. I know even an initiative, say, up and running, but like it's great to see, but like it still pays in significance into what the Galway wool could buy at the time.
Absolutely. And when you compare it to milk, I suppose, how milk has gone one direction and the wool has gone the other way. It's amazing. And there were two of the huge products, I suppose, going back when I was a young lad back in the 1960s.
Tom, I suppose you'll have fond memories from going to sales. You're one of the, I suppose, maybe the more decorated breeders. You've been into plenty of sales rings. You've got plenty of rosettes on sale days. What makes a good Galway sheep?
A good Galway sheep has a nice fleece and plenty of size and length, good bone, good legs as well. No weakness in the pasterns, that's very important. Good bob and maybe darkness in the nostrils and clean ears. You know, I looking back at a photograph, I saw myself at the Athenry sale in 1972, sitting on the wall with my father and brother. And, you know, that's 50 years ago this year. And I love the breed and I'm still with them. And, you know, they're a very easy sheep to mind and look after. So it's very, you know, they have been in my family for a lot longer than 50 years. So I'm delighted that, you know, that I've continued with the breed and, you know, enjoyed every minute of it.
I suppose, Gerry, and we maybe finish up around this subject, that you're celebrating 100 years, but that's, I suppose, 100 official years. In truth, it's a lot longer.
Absolutely, because the Brandon Ireland that we have at home, it was made by my grandfather's brother, who was a blacksmith, and he immigrated to Australia in in 1898, and his father had died in 1893. So he would have made the Brandon Aaron sometime around then. And I can go way back, because at the time of Griffith's valuation in 1855, my grandfather's grandfather had died during the Great Famine, and his wife was running the show at that particular time. And one of the mainstays, I suppose, of what sustained the family over the generations was the Galway sheep right up to the present day.
We'll finish in this, Tom. It'd be remiss of us not to ask you to remind again the sale date, the time of the sale.
We have a very strong entry this year. We have 100 females and 25 males. And the sale is on the Monday, the 19th of September in Athenry-Mart. The show is at 11 a.m. and the sale is at 1 p.m. So we would love to have a nice crowd there on our centenary year. So we're looking forward to the day now with great anticipation. And, you know, there's great interest this year. We never had as much interest with the acre scheme. And, we have already got 25 new members to our books added to this year. So we're very happy.
Well, lads, I'm delighted to, I suppose, be talking to you in your centenary year. And it won't be me in 100 years' time, but hopefully you're, whoever's talking, that your descendants will still be flying the flag for the Galway sheep breed. So thanks for taking the time this evening.
Thank you very much, Derek.
That's all we have time for this week, folks. A reminder, you can also tune into our new Young Stock podcast for young farmers. This week, our machinery team's Peter Thomas Keaveney speaks to machinery area sales manager Ben Buckley from County Dublin. The podcast features news for young farmers from young farmers and is available in all the usual spots. We have a big one next week, folks. The ploughing now only days away. Make sure you get our 72-page ploughing supplement with a site map and exhibitors list in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. We'll be there as always, so make sure to drop into our Farmers Journal stand if you're heading along. Look, you might even get into next week's podcast if you're up for talking. Thanks for listening, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.